Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Last February, I announced a plan that would bring our combat brigades out of Iraq while redoubling our efforts to strengthen Iraq's security forces and support its government and people. That's what we've done.
Promise kept to Americans, getting Americans out. But how close did President Obama come to declaring victory in his end of combat mission speech last night? He used the word victory once, more to redefine it than to declare it. We will hear that clip later. He never said the words win or won or prevail, certainly not mission accomplished with the Bush baggage that phrase has. This statement is as close as he came, and as close as he came to praising President Bush's troop surge.
The Americans who have served in Iraq completed every mission they were given. They defeated a regime that had terrorized its people, together with Iraqis and coalition partners who made huge sacrifices of their own. Our troops fought block by block to help Iraq seize the chance for a better future. They shifted tactics to protect the Iraqi people, trained Iraqi security forces, and took out terrorist leaders. Because of our troops and civilians, and because of the resilience of the Iraqi people, Iraq has the opportunity to embrace a new destiny, even though many challenges remain.
So the president did not declare the war won. He more declared it transferred to Iraqis.
Of course, violence will not end with our combat mission. Extremists will continue to set off bombs, attack Iraqi civilians, and try to spark sectarian strife. But ultimately, these terrorists will fail to achieve their goals. Iraqis are a proud people. They have rejected sectarian war, and they have no interest in endless destruction. They understand that in the end, only Iraqis can resolve their differences and police their streets. Only Iraqis can build a democracy within their borders. What America can do and will do is provide support for the Iraqi people as both a friend and a partner.
President Obama from his speech last night. But remember I said the president only used the word victory once and not to declare it, but to redefine it? Well, he redefined it as the success of others and the accomplishment of other goals at home and as the heroism of our troops. Listen.
In an age without surrender ceremonies, we must earn victory through the success of our partners and the strength of our own nation. Every American who serves joins an unbroken line of heroes that stretches from Lexington to Gettysburg, from Iwo Jima to Incheon, from Khe Sanh to Kandahar. Americans who have fought to see that the lives of our children are better than our own. Our troops are the steel in our ship of state. And though our nation may be traveling through rough waters, they give us confidence that our course is true, and that beyond the pre-dawn darkness, better days lie ahead. Thank you. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America and all who serve her.
We, too, thank any of you listening right now who served in combat or Iraq or anywhere at any time, but for the moment in Iraq and in Afghanistan, with all the sacrifices that that has entailed when most Americans are not sacrificing. But a pretty somber and ambiguous ending there to a speech about a somber and ambiguous war with a somber and ambiguous assessment of the State of the Union tied in to boot. We will hear more from the speech shortly, but let's ask that question again. Did the United States win the war in Iraq? I want to open the phones. We will save a few lines for Iraq war veterans. We definitely want you to have a say if you have been through this experience. Do you feel like you were fighting in an effort that has ended or is ending in victory? 212-433-WNYC for Iraq war veterans. Did the United States win the war in Iraq now that combat operations are over? 212-433-9692. Also, if you are Iraqi or Iraqi-American or of Iraqi descent, we want to hear from you. 212-433-WNYC. We'll save a couple of lines for Iraqis if you happen to be out there today. 212-433-9692. And anyone else? Has the U.S. won the Iraq War? 212-433-9692. And if not, What would you call it as combat operations officially end? 212-433-9692. But again, don't be offended if our screeners bump you, because we're saving some of the lines for Iraq war vets and Iraqis. Anyone, of course, can post to our page at WNYC.org, get the conversation started there. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And with us now are Fred Kaplan, who writes the War Stories column for Slate, and Omar al-Nidawi, political analyst, co-author of the blog Iraq the Model. He is a Baghdad-trained dentist and co-author of Iraq the Model. He is a member of the Wall Street Journal's Opinion Journal Federation. In 2007, PC World magazine chose Omar and his brother and co-blogger Muhammad as among the 50 most important people on the web. Omar and Fred, welcome back to both of you to WNYC.
Good to be
here. Thank you,
Ryan.
Fred, did the U.S. win the war in Iraq?
No, and I don't think anybody has even made that pretense. When the surge took place in 2007, you have to think back. What General Petraeus and everybody else said at the time was that the idea of the surge was to create a secure space that might give the Iraqi political factions room to work out their differences through politics, not through civil war. The U.S. effort in this surge, in that sense, and only in that sense, succeeded to an extent greater than anybody had forecast. The problem may very well be that the Iraqis are simply incapable of taking advantage of this space. In political terms, very little has changed since then. And what I think President Obama was saying last night is that we've done all we can do. The withdrawal, which many people still don't quite understand, the withdrawal schedule was actually negotiated by the Bush administration and the Iraqi government. The schedule was done at the Iraqis' insistence, and now it's time for them to work out the problem by themselves with some assistance from the United States.
Omar, did the U.S. win the war in Iraq? And if not victory, what would you call it?
Well, I think the war is not for the U.S. to win, actually. I mean, eventually it's the Iraqis who have to get to the point where they actually declare themselves winners and victors over terrorism and over regional influence. The U.S. role is only to enable, as President Obama also acknowledges, that to provide the enablers for the Iraqis to move forward. And I think at this point with the combat troops out of Iraq, the support that the Iraq needs is going to be huge. And a point that I think the president should have addressed and emphasized more is that regional influence in Iraq. We have strong lobbies in, you know, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and Turkey. These countries are trying to shape the political future in Iraq. And so far, the U.S. diplomacy, although the U.S. diplomats are now officially leading the mission, have not done enough to counterbalance the regional influence in Iraq. So I think military-wise, the operations, Iraq is going to see more progress in terms of security. But that would require kind of actually hinge on making political progress. The Iraqi politicians are resisting a lot of regional influence, but again, if the U.S. doesn't back and support a peaceful resolution for the political impasse in Baghdad, then things might have, we might see some setbacks in the situation.
Here is a recently returned veteran, Ben, on Coney Island. You're on WNYC. Ben, thank you for your service, and thank you for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Good. So, did we win the war?
There was no war to win. It's not the traditional. Like I said, I just came back last year, and everybody's looking for, like, a signing on a battleship or anything. It's not going to happen. We never lost any of our tactical situations. There's never been a battle that we went into that we lost. Never. It's never happened. But that being said, this is more of a Vietnam-type withdrawal without the imminent danger of the same enemy that you were fighting coming down after you.
Where did you fight mostly?
Actually, I battles all over the country, but mostly Baghdad and southern Iraq, like in Basra.
So how do you feel about the mission that you were engaged in with this kind of ambiguous withdrawal situation? Do you feel that it was worth it? Do you feel in general, that the leaders had it right in setting out in the first place?
You know, you can ask 10 people in the army that question, and you'll get about 7 different answers.
Uh-huh.
But by and large, almost every soldier you'll speak to says that they wish they would have had the amount of troops they had in the beginning that they originally requested.
Right.
And everybody across the board, left or right, feels like we wouldn't have even been in the situation that we were in if we had. The main problem, which people tend to forget, is that we went in and we hit every tactical scenario that we wanted. We got it, but we just didn't have enough people on the ground to take advantage of the ground that we gained.
Let me ask you one other question before you go, and it's not really your job to answer this question, but it sounds like you've been all over the country. Do you think that we, the United States, are safer from al-Qaeda today as a result of the Iraq war than if it had not been fought?
No. That's plain and simple, no. And the reason for that is because we lost, our focus was, like him or love him, Saddam Hussein, he was a demon, but he was a demon that was a stabilizing force in that region. And al-Qaeda was afraid of Hussein. They wouldn't come from Afghanistan to go to Iraq. They just didn't like him. And he didn't like them, and he would exhibit extreme prejudice in dealing with them. So, no.
Right.
I would say that we've actually fostered more contempt simply because of the civilian casualties.
Mm-hmm. Ben, thank you very much again for your service and certainly for your phone call. So to our guests on the same question, Fred Kaplan from Slate. Are Americans more safe, less safe, about the same safe from al-Qaeda than if the war was never fought? And if Ben is right, then was all that American blood and Iraqi blood spilled in vain, because wasn't that the point of the war?
Look, you know, it's pretty clear that after the invasion of Afghanistan at the end of 2001 and into the spring of 2002, al-Qaeda was pretty much washed up. They'd been chased out of their base. Their financial networks had been severed. Everybody was on the run. It was the invasion of Iraq that served as the new recruitment poster for al-Qaeda jihadists, that gave the jihadists a new base, a new form of legitimacy in their arguments that the United States was essentially anti-Muslim. So it not only does not make us more safe from al-Qaeda, it actually revived the insecurity that had been temporarily quelled when we invaded Afghanistan.
Omar al-Nadawi, co-author of the blog Iraq, mm-hmm. the Model, you've been more of a supporter of the war. I know you've blown hot and cold on
right.
the Bush administration over the years. You've been on the show periodically. But from where you sit, do you agree with Fred? Do you agree with our veteran caller? Is the United States no more safe, and maybe, in fact, less safe from al-Qaeda than if this war had never been fought?
I think I somewhat disagree. Although I kind of agree that al-Qaeda did find ways to, you know, adjust to the military defeat it was dealt in Pakistan, in Afghanistan. And that's the case, actually, with any kind of the modern movement of terrorist groups. They are amorphous, they are decentralized, they will adjust and they will adapt, whether the Iraq war happened or not. That's not actually, we should not blame the Iraq war for that. But I think what the Iraq war served was an example of how al-Qaeda, a Sunni Islamist, primarily a Sunni Islamist organization, could be defeated at the hands of Sunni Muslims in a Sunni Arab Muslim country. And that's what we saw primarily in Anbar and in other parts of western Iraq and in Baghdad. We saw the tribes reject al-Qaeda's ideology. We saw them pick up arms and join their Shiite soldiers and Shiite brothers from other tribes and from the government and join the United States against Al-Qaeda and rooted out Al-Qaeda, actually, in Anbar and Fallujah and Ramadi.
So are you optimistic about the minimization of Al-Qaeda in Iraq going forward with the U.S. out?
I think the delay in government formation and the fact that politicians and government officials are distracted have given Al-Qaeda some breathing space in the past 5 or 6 months. But I think this is only a temporary situation. I think once we are back on track, once we have a functional government again, I don't think Al-Qaeda will stand a chance at actually effectively regrouping and reorganizing, because what Al-Qaeda lost is not just a momentum. They lost the public support, and that's the key to any terrorist organization or any insurgency for successful operations.
Maybe in the Iraqi domestic context, they lost the public support. But Fred says the Iraq war became the ultimate recruiting tool for Al-Qaeda worldwide. I know your focus is Iraq, but do you have an opinion about that?
Well, they certainly did recruit some people from other countries, but their recruitment drive has failed in Iraq. It's failing, at least.
Jose, go ahead. I'm sorry.
If not for the Iraq war, there would have been a different cause. Palestine has been there for 60 years. It's going to still there. It's going to still be there. It's going to still be used for recruitment. They will find another context under which to recruit
right.
Militants from across the world.
Fred, you want to come back on this very briefly?
Well, I mean, just briefly. I mean, it's true that Al-Qaeda is now an amorphous organization, but it certainly wasn't in the spring of 2002. I think they had nowhere to go, and now they have plenty of other places to go. I think it's true.
Maybe 9/11. Maybe 9/11 itself was a much bigger recruitment tool.
No, in fact, that was that there was a division within Al-Qaeda over whether to address the near enemy or the Afar enemy. They went after the Afar, and it really was as a major, major setback. It was the near that drew them back into the battle.
That being Iraq. Another vet, Jose in the Bronx. Jose, thanks so much for your service, and thank you for calling us.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on the radio. How's everybody?
All right. Where were you in Iraq?
Haqqaniya, Haditha Triad, Guam, Fallujah, and Zaidan.
And what do you want to say?
Did
we win the war, right?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't believe so, because in my experience there, we had our Iraqi army that were playing both sides of the fences. They were playing on our side, collecting the paycheck and trying to gather intel, and then on Al-Qaeda, a terrorist force. I don't know if it was Al-Qaeda, but, you know, terrorist forces, the same people that were attacking us. And then on my second tour, when we were over there, we had the first month, we were getting ambushed and, you know, attacked and IED attacks all over the place, and then a month later we weren't getting hit with anything. Then we realized that there was a recruitment of IA troops, of Iraqi Army and IP, Iraqi police forces, and all these people that they were paying to protect the Iraqi people in the Iraqi country were the same people that were attacking us a month before and attacking the Marines before us that were there.
So does that leave you optimistic or pessimistic about the future of Iraq without U.S. combat troops?
It leaves me more pessimistic, because it seems that there will be more avenues of corruption and more ways easily corrupted, because these people can't control themselves or can't control their own country.
Jose, thank you. Omar, quick reaction to that before we go to a break?
Well, I think turning the tide with the surge and needed a lot of support from the locals, and opening recruitment, providing alternatives for the locals, even former insurgents, is part of the reconciliation process, part of the counterinsurgency doctrine that worked in Iraq. And as your guest Jose said, the people who used to attack a month before became soldiers, attacked stopped. They will eventually be integrated into the new security apparatus, and they will become I think, more and more responsible elements of the
society. So he seems to say, without maybe strong feelings on one side or the other, corruption, as he puts it, maybe their loyalty going to the highest bidder is going to be in play for a lot of Iraqi soldiers, a lot of Iraqi policemen
for a while. It's a transitional stage.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, yeah, it's a transitional stage, and we will have to accept everyone. As long as we bring people closer from the insurgency into our side, then we will do that, I think, until the balance of power shifts in a way that the insurgency is no longer sustainable.
We'll continue in a minute. We'll play more clips from President Obama's Iraq speech last night, particularly in this instance with respect to the references he made to George W. Bush. We'll play Obama as a candidate about the troop surge and Obama last night about the troop surge, and we'll continue with our guests. And you know what? We're going to only take calls for this segment from veterans. Today, on this occasion, end of combat operations, we're getting phone calls from veterans. We're just going to take calls from veterans. And, of course, anybody can post to our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Lehrer on WNYC. We're talking about President Obama's Iraq speech with Fred Kaplan, who writes the War Stories column on Slate, and Omar al-Nadawi, Iraqi expat, co-author of the blog Iraq the Model, and a periodic Wall Street Journal op-ed contributor. He had one recently on the end of combat operations for the U.S. And if you are an Iraq war vet, of course, we've taken so many calls from everybody over many, many years of programming on this. Today, with the end of combat operations, we're hearing the voices of veterans on the phone. If you're an Iraq war vet, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'll get back to your calls. But one of the interesting things last night was President Obama's references to President Bush, who he was elected in part on his vociferous denunciations of. Here is Obama in an MSNBC appearance in 2007, opposing the troop surge for Iraq.
I am not persuaded that 20,000 additional troops in Iraq is going to solve the sectarian violence there. In fact, I think it'll do the reverse. I think it takes pressure off the Iraqis to arrive at the sort of political accommodation that every observer believes is the ultimate solution to the problems we face there. So I am going to actively oppose the president's proposal. I don't doubt his sincerity when he says that he thinks this is the best approach, but I think he is wrong. And I think the American people believe he's wrong.
Senator Barack Obama, presidential hopeful Barack Obama in 2007. Here is President Barack Obama on Bush and the surge last night.
As we do, I'm mindful that the Iraq war has been a contentious issue at home. Here, too, it's time to turn the page. This afternoon, I spoke to former President George W. Bush. It's well known that he and I disagreed about the war from its outset. Yet no one can doubt President Bush's support for our troops or his love of country and commitment to our security. As I've said, there were patriots who supported this war and patriots who opposed it. And all of us are united in appreciation for our servicemen and women and our hopes for Iraqi's future. The greatness of our democracy is grounded in our ability to move beyond our differences and to learn from our experience as we confront the many challenges ahead.
And here's one more relevant clip from last night. The president now referencing the Iraq surge as the model for his own policy in Afghanistan.
Within Afghanistan, I've ordered the deployment of additional troops who, under the command of General David Petraeus, are fighting to break the Taliban's momentum. As with the surge in Iraq, these forces will be in place for a limited time to provide space for the Afghans to build their capacity and secure their own future. But, as was the case in Iraq, we can't do for Afghans what they must ultimately do for themselves. That's why we're training Afghan security forces and supporting a political resolution to Afghanistan's problems. And next August, we will begin a transition to Afghan responsibility. The pace of our troop reductions will be determined by conditions on the ground, and our support for Afghanistan will endure. But make no mistake, this transition will begin, because open-ended war serves neither our interests nor the Afghan peoples.
President Obama from last night. So, Fred Kaplan from Slate, did President Obama, with that narrative arc, acknowledge the success of the Bush troop surge and even the wrongness of his own 2007 position without ever explicitly giving President Bush credit?
Well, you know, when people ask, did the surge work? I mean, I don't want to sound Clintonian, but it all depends what the word work means. If you're asking if it reduced violence, yes, it did that, along with what Omar talked about, the Sunni tribal leaders themselves coming to us as a alliance of convenience to battle off al-Qaeda in Iraq. If you talk about also the erection of barriers inside cities, concrete barriers to keep sectarian hostiles from mixing with one another, you talk, you know, 2.7 million internal refugees in Iraq, and another 2 million who just left to go to other countries. It did reduce violence. But, you know, wars are fought for political objectives. One of the servicemen who called, and I'm embarrassed to say I forget his name, said that, you know, we never lost a single tactical engagement, which reminded me of the exchange between the U.S. and North Vietnamese military commanders after that war was over, and I don't mean to compare the two, but the Americans said, you know, we never lost any tactical engagement with you, and the North Vietnamese guy said, that's true, but it's also irrelevant. What's going on now in Iraq and what has been going on since the insurgency began, it's not even so much a sectarian quarrel. It's a quarrel for political power, and until the political situation in Baghdad can be stabilized, then the fighting will continue. And the surge, again, what was a means to provide a space so that the Iraqis could settle their differences. If they can't settle their differences, then, you know, all I'm afraid was for naught.
Let's get another vet in here. Michael in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thank you for your service and thank you for calling.
Appreciate it. Brian, you've got a great show going on.
Thank you. Where'd you serve?
I feel as though a lot of the tactics, you know, there was a major change in 2007, 2008. We intensified civil military operations, and I think that if we continue to focus on sustainability, we'll be successful. But, you know, if we have ragtag policies towards civil military operations, we will lose Iraq. And it's not an issue of winning or losing, you know, I don't like to look at things like that, you know. I'm a big fan of Derrida, and binary thinking is not something that I look at.
Thank you very much. Were a lot of people in the barracks reading Derrida?
No, I actually brought that, and I brought Last Tango in Paris, and freaked out my first sergeant. So it was pretty neat.
Thank you.
It's really interesting as far as the area that I was operating in, Babel Province, the Triangle of Death, and this is an area that has a mixture of Sunni and Shia, and I think it's really important to look at the sustainability projects with provincial reconstruction teams and all of these different elements in the battle zone. You know, so it's not just knocking down doors and making a difference there, but actually winning the hearts and minds by embedding yourselves in the villages.
Michael, thank you again. And Omar, you wrote in the Wall Street Journal last month something very relevant to that, I think, which is that the current state of affairs in Iraq is a blessed affliction, as you put it, and that Iraqis should be proud that Western media have missed the story about progress there. But you also wrote, I think, that President Obama seems to have a certain ambivalence about engagement with Iraq going forward. And I think I hear the caller, Michael, saying that from his veteran's perspective, that engagement is crucial, even post-combat operations, on the detailed local level.
Of course. I think that the surge, yes, it worked in terms of creating the space, but now it's important that we actually utilize this space, this opening and relaxation and easing in tension between the political leaders and between the societies. We have seen in the elections a huge difference in the people's attitude towards sectarian politics. In the late 2005 elections, we had only 25 or so elected members of parliament who were elected on basis of being secular, liberal, non-sectarian. And now we have 90, almost 300, 400 times a percent increase in voters who are voting on for liberal and non-sectarian secular platforms. That's a huge difference. We have the major political parties switching their political agendas into non-sectarian arguments that and issue-based politics. But
really, do you really think so? I mean, we had the New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman on the show earlier this week, and he said one problem with Iraq today is that there is no Iraqi Nelson Mandela, by which he meant there is nobody who has emerged as a political leader willing to transcend sectarianism. The political leaders seem to be digging in ever more as Sunnis or Shiites primarily.
We may not have a Nelson Mandela in Iraq, but I think it's more grassroots. It's more from the bottom up. It's going from the bottom up, not from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the dark years of sectarian violence in 2006 and 2007 and until early 2008 have made the people, people were sick and tired of that kind of politics. And I think that attitude was reflected in the platforms and the political and the election campaigns of the major political parties. So the change happened from the bottom up, not from a new Iraqi Nelson Mandela.
Also, I want to get your reaction, Omar, to one of the comments on our comments page. Taher from Croton on Hudson writes, "The result of America's military adventurism is the destruction of Iraqi society, the death of thousands, economic collapse, political and social instability, a generation of children growing up with horrific violence, and need I say more?" And then somebody else, BC from Flushing, also writes, "I do not wish to detract from the respect paid to veterans. However, thank the Iraqis for their sacrifice. Tens of thousands, now I'm paraphrasing, the countless, literally, we never bothered to count them, countless deaths of Iraqis in the gigantic refugee crisis it's created. It's simply obscene to be calling this a victory."
It is tough. It's not easy to call it a victory. I don't think anyone would call it a victory in that sense. The sacrifice, the price was really, really high for Iraqis. And we've been actually paying the price for a long time. Since 1980, Iraq never knew peace, and even before that. I lived 27 years there, and there is hardly a day that I would call it that we were at peace or we didn't have people dying for reason or no reason. Our economy was never really in a good shape in the first place to think that it was destroyed. And we had refugees. We had people. We had mass exodus from Iraq since the 1930s. So this is not
Are you willing to sit here today as an Iraqi and say it was worth tens or possibly more than 100,000 Iraqi deaths to get Saddam Hussein off the country's back and leave it in this current state of uncertainty?
We needed a chance. We were paying the price without a chance in the beginning, but when Saddam was removed, at least we had a chance. We had a chance to make our future different and make the sacrifices worth it.
Let's give our last airtime in this segment to two more vets. Jimmy in Connecticut, then we'll go to Robert in the Bronx. Let me give you guys a minute each to wrap this up before we run out of time. Hi, Jimmy. Thanks a lot for your service and for your call.
Hey, good morning. I think it's too early to say whether we've won this war or not, but I was at Trabil and Walid. Trabil was a combat outpost on the Jordanian border. Walid was on the Syrian border. And the people, this is recent, 2009, and with us leaving, the people of Iraq, who had become very friendly to the Marines, they really respected the Marines. We had done them well through our years there, and they were petrified. I was a truck driver. They were petrified that we were leaving. They said that the corruption within their military was horrible, and some of which I witnessed. And then they also said that they were petrified that Iran had these like secret cells that were going to come in and just totally overthrow everything that was trying to be made right.
Mm-hmm. So that's the uncertainty as to where they stand now. Jimmy, thank you. And Robert in the Bronx. Hi, Robert.
How you doing? Good morning. I'm going to keep it as simple as possible because we don't have much time. But picture, I'm walking up Madison Avenue in Manhattan, and there's a domestic dispute between a couple. And I decide to jump in and save the day. Not only am I getting beat up by the man who was the aggressor, but now I'm getting beat up by his wife. They're both attacking me. That's what happened over in Iraq. Did we win the war? Absolutely not. That's an unequivocal no. And as far as whether or not we have more to concern ourselves with today than we did prior to 7 years ago, 100%. Because the United States of America has developed more enemies now than they ever have before.
Robert, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And Fred Kaplan, you want to just chime in real quick on the disagreement between these last two vets? Maybe Jimmy from Connecticut has it right, which is that it's too early to tell whether the U.S., quote unquote, won the war. And only history years from now will tell us whether Iraq became the democracy that President Bush hoped it would, that would become Iraq the model, in the name of Omar's blog, and also we're down to the safety of the United States, or whether it just winds up a mess. Maybe we really need to ask the question in 2035.
Yeah, I would say two things. One, there's the famous line by Mao Zedong when he was asked about whether the French Revolution was a success, and he said it's too early to tell. On the other hand, a friend of mine said that he thought that in 50 years people would look back at the Iraq War as a success. And I said, well, I don't think that we should make policy on such long-term grounds. You know, the damage, the sacrifice, the death and destruction, I think, it's even if everything went terrifically well 30, 40 years from now, it would probably be due to other things that happened in the meantime.
Right.
I really don't see how one could classify this as success.
Fred Kaplan writes the War Stories column on Slate. Omar al-Nadawi writes Iraq, the model, the blog. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, are the NYPD really cooking the books on crime stats? And if so, what would be a better model of policing? Stay tuned.